everybody, and welcome back to yet another episode of the Gameable Audio, your VGM podcast. I am your host, Kristoffer Schenström, and this is episode 23. And yet, we are still in November, so you know what that means. We're going to focus today's episode on yet another female composer. This one is a little bit special, but of course, we're not going to spoil everything right here at the start of the episode. Instead, we're going to take everything as usual in chronological order, starting out where she began. So today's composer that we're talking about is Yuka Watanabe. So here's the thing, when we are considering this week's composer, she was a very special case, as I just said, but nonetheless, she is a very special individual, which will also be very interesting to look into. It's always interesting for me when I get into the research stage. For this case specifically, I actually didn't know her at all in the beginning. Therefore, all the situations that happened to me when I started doing the research became so much more apparent and so much more interesting. So first of all, when it comes to her list of credits within video games, it seems like her work is split up into major sections. So first, in the first half of this episode, we're going to focus on the first part of her career. So as there are no interviews surrounding her work specifically with Yuka herself, we don't really have any birth date, we don't have any birthplace, but we do know that she was born Japanese. In her first segment of Yuka, she started out as a composer working at the Japanese studio ADK, standing for Alpha Denshi Kogyo, a company that preliminary in the early days worked with arcade games, many suitable for the Neo Geo, which was specifically developed by the people in the studio in 1990, but then released by SNK. So, in 1987, ADK releases the first game that Yuka is credited in. And this game is called Time Soldiers. So the first track of the week that we're going to listen to is named The Future World. Down the first track of the week. This was Time Soldiers with the track named The Future World. And starting out on a title as a sole composer is actually quite a feat. Usually when we're looking into young composers, they are usually tending to co-compose their original soundtracks together with somebody else, somebody that have worked in the business for quite some time. But Yuka Watanabe actually started working solely as the only composer on the first game she worked on. So in this title, Yuka worked alone. The game here was developed by the Japanese studio ADK and was released firstly on arcade in Japan in 1987. The game was later also ported to the Amiga, Atari ST, Sega Master System, and the Commodore 64, and all this happening in 1989, so 2 years after the initial arcade release. And the track we've been listening to is the arcade version when it first arrived, and also, just so I don't forget to name this as I had this noted down, the game also was released as a digital download both on the PSP and the PS3 in 2012. And the game was also available later on a service called AntStream since 2019, something I never heard of as well, which is super interesting. So it's basically a subscription service where you can purchase and play a lot of arcade titles, and Time Soldiers is apparently one of them. Didn't know. No, but when it comes to the music here, and especially looking at the arcade version, I don't know about you guys, but for me, I solely picked this track was not the best one on the OST. Don't get me wrong in this one. The sole reason why I actually got this is usually when we tend to listen to arcade music, they don't sound like they're taken straight out of the pocket of Sega. For some reason, the high-pitched noises and everything just screams Sega surrounding this. It's like they're using the exact same sound chip on this. I don't know this for sure, but I specifically wanted to talk a little bit about this, that it is so interesting to see different arcade games and how they kind of did and moved on with music surrounding them. Usually when I'm listening to arcade games and the OSTs from them, I don't tend to have straight out of my brain situations where I think about Sega. I rarely do. Of course, there's a lot of Sega games that also were on arcade, but when the arcade version comes out, it has a better richness to it. In this case, with this specific track for an arcade, in my opinion, it's kind of a drawback. But that's me not liking the sound chip on Sega, especially when they're utilizing these high-pitched noises that sounds more like the console is kind of breaking. But at the same time, it comes with its charm. So I'm not like chopping this straight off or anything like that. It's just that me personally, I have a hard time with these high-pitched noises. It sounds like they're screeching and screaming in my ears, and I tend not to like that. So that's why I usually kind of go away from Sega and don't like that music style that much. The games themselves, special. But in this case, I really like the melody. It's just the high pitches that I have a problem with. But it's still so much interesting fact that they actually got this type of sound in arcade. So that's what I liked, and that's, I hope you guys liked the song as well. As I said, this is not the best one, so if you want, go ahead and look into the other tracks for Time Soldiers. There were some really interesting ones, especially the boss battles and so on. Really found it interesting. But anyway, let's move on here. No, don't talk more about the Time Soldiers because I haven't played, or the music that sounds like Sega. So, during the time at ADK, Yuka worked on composition, sound effects, character voices, and even voice casting. She was either credited as Yuka Watanabe, Tambourine Yuka, or Yuka Kurosawa. I don't know specifically why Yuka Kurosawa, if it was actually a first name or something she married and got that name, or like it tended to be back in the day for Japan. They usually tended to give fake last names or use fake names or some type of nickname. And the main reason for this is basically so other companies couldn't steal them away from their own company. So it was one way to kind of protect thyself from danger and losing your employees to other companies, as companies in this time era were kind of blooming and a lot of different studios kind of opened up and started doing games. Anyway, moving on with the games that she worked on. So it's going to be quite a list here, as the next game we're going to talk about, it's so many years ahead. So buckle up, everybody, as we're going to talk a little bit more about the different games, a lot of different numbers, so feel free to note these down if you want to. But yeah, we're starting out right after the first title here with Time Soldiers. We have The Sky Adventure and Gang Wars in 1989. We have Magician Lord in 1990 for the arcade, followed by Blue's Journey, Cross Swords, which is also a favorite of mine on Neo Geo, and also a port of Magician Lord in 1991 for the Neo Geo. We got Ninja Commando and World Heroes in 1992, which was also for the Neo Geo. We can see a pattern here working with arcade and Neo Geo, as Neo Geo were basically a concept of home arcade, basically. Of course, expensive as hell, especially today for collectors. It's not cheap at all, but specifically for back in the day, it wasn't much cheaper either. In 1983, we only have World Heroes 2, the follow-up of the first game that she also worked on. And this was also for the Neo Geo. Then starting to move over or forward with more arcade and TurboGrafx-CD games, but also Neo Geo CD games. First out, we have a port of the World Heroes 2 in 1994. Aggressors of Dark Combat for arcade in the same year. Crosswords 2, which I didn't know was a thing until now, when I was researching, which is also something now I really want to try out. But it was only released for Neo Geo CD in 1995, so I guess it's gonna be super expensive just getting it. Anyway, World Heroes Perfect for arcade in 1995, Ninja Masters and Twinkle Star Sprites in 1996, and lastly, Beastbusters Second Nightmare in 1998. Yuka's time at ADK and SNK lasted for 11 years working on these games, and some information rumors work even for the musical work was also that she was working on TV as well. I did not, however, find any hard evidence surrounding these rumors, but after the last game we can see like a time slot here when nothing really happened for Yuka's credits surrounding games. And I guess this is where the rumors at, and that's where she kind of worked with TV and so on. But anyway, this is where the research gets interesting. And yeah, this is the first part. We're splitting up a little bit, as we're going to listen to on the second part, where everything splits and Yuka enters the second part of the career. In the beginning, I said it was split into two and it would be about half of the episode. That comes with a little bit of but you will soon know why. So the next song we're going to listen to is called The Spirit of Hawk from the game Rumble Roses. From the game Rumble Roses. And this time we're looking at a soundtrack co-composed, but actually Yuka only composed this specific song. In this soundtrack we have a total of 12 composers. Sadly it's just too many to talk about everything. So, and this is also when I'm excluding the composer only called Konami in this case. The game here was co-developed by the Japanese studio Konami TYO and Yuka's company. And the game was released for PlayStation 2 exclusively in 2004 for US and 2005 for the rest of the world. And when it comes to this track specifically now, I really adore this track of multiple kind of senses and cases. But first of all, let's talk a little bit more about the origin. So Rumble Roses is that sort of wrestling games, all girls, from different nations and different kind of styles and so on. So the Spirit of Hawk, if people just think a little bit outside the box and get a little bit... No, you don't even need to think outside the box. That's me misspeaking. Spirit of the Hawk. Of course, we're talking about an indigenous Indian girl here. That's the style of her is. So the track here is... A-I-G-L-E, eagle, I guess. It's like an eagle thing. I'm just guessing here wildly. I don't actually know how to kind of say her name correctly. Eagle, I guess. I don't know for sure. But this is her entrance theme nonetheless. So it's no track that is specifically played on her stage or something like that. No, this track is played when she gets into the scene, when she is getting promoted or they're talking about showing her as a character joining the battle. And she joins in on a horse, of course. And the horse is white, so it looks like Spirit from the Spirit movies. I don't know. I don't actually know if the movie... I'm pretty sure it's 2004-2005. I guess Spirit has released at this point in time. I don't know for sure, yet again. No, but when we're listening to this, I do not get the indigenous Indian culture into this theme. For me, when I'm listening to this, you have the string instruments and so on. It does come with a little bit of what can feel like a wild type of style. But when I'm listening to this, and I don't know about you guys if you remember it more close, but for me, when I'm listening to this, I'm getting so like a hardcore vibe. Like, this music could definitely be in a Pocket Rocky game. Something that is more spiritual. But of course, when we're talking about the indigenous Indians, they are a very spiritual people. And I just love Spirit of the Hawk, Spirit. So I guess that's something that they did really right with this theme. But when I'm listening to this track, I'm more drawn to the Eastern culture rather than the Western culture. But at the same time, when I'm saying this and the more I think about it, what is the difference between Western and Eastern spiritualistic style of music? When we're thinking about music, of course, now we have a Japanese person making Western-style themes. And of course, there may still be like, oh, this was a nice track for this type of character. But is it specifically, like, is she using specific instruments that the indigenous Indians kind of used? Most likely not in this case. I'm pretty sure she used more Eastern-based instruments while making this. But I don't know for sure. But it's a nice thought, though. And for me, this sounds more like not an indigenous Eastern, but an Eastern-style type of track. Would love to see this in a Pocket Rocky game. Love it. Still, really good track, considering all the different kind of tracks you have in this soundtrack. The styles are everywhere. So I understand why they have so many different composers, as all, most likely, a majority of these composers have most likely only done one song. Most likely. I don't know for sure, because I didn't specifically go through each and every track. But most likely, the reason why there are so many composers are just because of the fact that a lot of them were... they did a specific song for a different character, and they did that specific song. Moving on with what comes next. And of course, this is going to be like the really short section of this, which is also why we kind of stem it forth into the middle section of Yuka's career here. So, as I said before the track, we are now getting into her second part of her career. And the reason for that is mainly because of the first part of her career, she actually composed music. While in the second part, she actually takes on new roles. She leaves ADK in order to join Konami, starting out with making this specific track for Rumble Roses. Following up next is a majority of games in which she has just worked with sound and audio programming, with some specific games that stands out. So, starting with Rumble Roses in 2004, the next game we have is the Sword of Ethria, followed up by Castlevania Curse of Darkness, and a special entry for Dance Dance Revolution Ultramix, as the Spirit of Hawk track is included in that game. All of these games were released in 2005, and of course this section is a little bit smaller, and the reason why is that Castlevania Curse of Darkness is actually the last game Yuka composes music for to date. So we're going to listen to one of her last tracks that she did work on composing specifically. So the track we're going to listen to from Castlevania Curse of Darkness is Waltz of the Lazy Chair Room. Thank you. Vaults of the Lazy Share Room from the game Castlevania Curse of Darkness. When it comes to this composition and for this game, Yuke actually composed only two tracks for this album. The first track is a whimsical track called the Proboscis Fairy, and then we have the Walls of the Lazy Share Room in the second, and this is more of a serious track, I would guess, because, well, it felt more serious comparing to the other track. For the OST, Yuka also joined in by other composers, and this time we have the Japanese Michiru Yamane, who is very well versed in Castlevania music, and Teki Gawara. Sadly, the person is only credited in the OC, like the original soundtrack's text. I can't really find them in the credits and so on, so I have literally no idea who this person is. Searching for this specific name, we found Akenshi, but he worked on a lot of other games, which in this case for Tenchi Gawara, didn't find anything else, so it was really hard to try and cross-section this person and who it is and what they kind of did. Of course, with harder research specifically for these characters, of course we might find something, but I'm not focused on this person in this episode. So, hence to that, I don't have more information. The game here was developed by the Japanese studio Konami and was released both on PS2 and Xbox back in 2005. When it comes to this track, I really love and adore this one. Especially comparing to the other one, because the other one was like, I have no idea what to say about it because it's so freaking whimsical and crazy, it's just crazy. But when it comes to Castlevania, all in all, it usually has this kind of rock term kind of sense, even for the waltzer thematicism within the games. We have Symphony of the Night, which also have the ballroom and so on, and of course we tend to see the ballrooms over and over again. This is the Walls of the Lazy Share Room. In this case, since I haven't played this specific game, I don't know what it exactly means. Maybe it is a very whimsical room. I mean, Lazy Share Room. It sounds whimsical in the name, but the song sounds very serious. And it actually sounds like a waltz. I don't know for sure, because, of course, the waltz is 1-2-3-4, 1-2-3-4. Dancing part, at least. I don't know if that is automatically translated well into music composition. That's not my forte, and that's not why I'm doing this podcast. But nonetheless, I really like the style of this. It was very nice, neat, and very serene, in my opinion, comparing to other games in the series. So, for me, it felt like a very fresh kind of breath of air. So I really enjoyed that sense. And it's sad, of course, to see that Yuka is not working on any more specific song compositions here. Looking at what she has worked on and where she can have, like, where she's going, it is, though, very interesting because we can, from time to time, see composers that also work with implementation. But there's not a lot of composers that moved from composition and into the programming and implementation part like Yuka did. I haven't seen that. It's not common, at least, in my opinion, from what I've researched and what I found previously. I know a lot of composers that do work with implementation parts, so they work with the composition and implementation, but never working solely with composition and then only implementation. So it's very unique to see, and I really like to see these things. Of course, it will be weird for me to continue my talk since we're focusing solely on composers, but still a very unique opportunity. I did not know about this, so it was just a happy surprise for me to see and read about this, and of course continue to do the research on this. So, following up from now, we only have audio and sound programming slash engineering in the upcoming games. The next game here is Elebits for the Wii in 2006, followed by Deus Adventure in 2007. In 2008, she worked both on Time Hollow, where she worked on sound scripting, which is more specific, and then Suikoden Tear Cries? Something like that. And on Suikoden, she worked on audio programming, and both of these games were released for the Nintendo DS. We also get the sequel, Elebits: The Adventure of Kai and Zero, for the Nintendo DS in 2009, and the return of yet another Castlevania game. This time it's Castlevania Harmony of Despair, which was released in 2010. The next game is one of my favorite ones on the Xbox 360, hands down, hands up, doesn't matter where you keep it, but the game is also available for PS3 for people that are interested in this game and haven't played this one, highly recommended on me. The game I'm talking about is Azura's Wrath, released in 2012. The next games that kind of pops up from here, there are more like rapid shots that we're getting to the end of Yuka's career to date, as we are right now. But as we're doing this rapid fire until we get to the last song here that we're going to listen to, which is the last song she also worked on, we get Naruto Shippuden, Ultimate Ninja Storm 3, but also the full Burst version, which released a little bit later, but yet in the same year, and also Yo-Yo's Bizarre Adventure All-Stars Battle, and all these three games were released in 2013. And before we take the last stop, I also want to kind of point out here that she did work as a sound director for the game Pokemon Masters, which is a mobile game, which was also released in 2019, so we are getting closer to the latest release here. And lastly, the game she is credited on last here. The game we're talking about here is Yo-Yo's Bizarre Adventure All-Stars Battle R. And the track we're going to listen to is not composed by her, but another composer we're going to talk about as soon as we listen to the song. The song is Lisa Lisa Elizabeth. That was the last track of the week. This is JoJo's Bizarre Adventure All-Star Battle R and Lisa Lisa Elizabeth. And yeah, in this game, she did not work on composition at all. Instead, she was working as the sound programmer. Composers, however, are the Japanese Annie Kay, Ryosuke Terao, Erika Kurosaki, Masaki Kuniwake? I think it's Kaniwake. I just read that really English. So I'm sorry for that. And last but not least... Oh, sorry. There's two of them. Sorry, I can't even read my own notes here when the names are showing up. The next one is Masaki Hara. And specifically, the person behind this amazing track is Shikeo Fukuda. And the game here was developed by the Japanese studio Cyber Connect 2. And was released in 2022 for PC, Nintendo Switch, PS4, Xbox One, PS5, and lastly, the Xbox Series. And when it comes to this freaking track, holy crap, I was trying to listen through the full track, but not the full track, the full OST, the original soundtrack of this game. First of all, it was a little bit hard to find, as I don't know really. It was just hard finding the tracks, to be honest. But listening through all these different tracks, they had a really wide variety of styles and genres, just like the Rumble Roses, to be honest. But when it comes to JoJo's Bizarre Adventure, the whole freaking series is I would say it's very niche. It's very special in style. It's very special in how it kind of performs and so on. It's not your usual kind of anime manga going on with JoJo's Bizarre Adventure. I don't even know if it's a manga, to be honest. I'm not that well versed in JoJo's Bizarre Adventure. I did see a little bit of anime of it. I do know of the games. And I also do know a little bit about the memes and so on that comes from JoJo's Bizarre Adventure. And of course, how many people out in the world there that really love and adore this series? It's hard to kind of avoid people that love this game, because when they do release new games, a lot of people just talk fanatically about them. But yeah, back to the game and the track here. No, the fusion style of funk and something else is going on here, but I really love the funk fusion of this track. It is speedy, it has oomph, I would say, and with oomph I'm seeing it comes with a lot of attitude. And that is something for me, from from what I know of JoJo's Bizarre Adventure, it's a lot about the attitude. So I really love and adore this track, because it, for me, it really portrays JoJo's Bizarre Adventure really well. And specifically when it comes to these character themes, it seems like they are played in the background a little bit when the characters are showing up, but from what I understood, even a little bit in the stages, but that, I might be a little bit wrong there, because I didn't research that too well. For me, I just went through all these different character themes and also the other music, because a lot of music in this. This game is also called R. This actually has a first name, which was also, first game, sorry, which was JoJo's Bizarre Adventure All-Star Battle. The R came in later as another game, so I guess there's a lot of DLC characters that might have been available for Battle, and then with R it's just like a definite edition, rendering all the different characters and all the content they got from the other games. I don't know for sure, yet again, this is just me assuming and pulling news and information out of my ass. But they usually tend to do that kind of thing with these type of games as well. Haven't played this game, do know a little bit, so yeah. Let's kind of leave it at that before I'm making a full ass out of myself, just assuming things. But yeah, love and adore this funky track, and I hope you guys loved it as well. Because for me, it was just pure amazing. I've been listening to this track multiple times ever since I started research. I just had the music while I was still doing research in the background, just playing along. I was like, fudge, yeah, I just love and adore it. So I really hope you do too. Moving on with the last things here. So, when we're looking back to see so much fun from a person that goes from the composition position to a full-time music implementer, I would say, working with engineering behind the music that we all love to hear within these games, I cannot say specifically for how long Yuka worked at Konami, as multiple titles he worked on like the second part of a career were released also by other studios, in which, however, is connected also to Konami and even Capcom. But to date, Yuka is working at a Japanese studio named Dina, and for listeners who may or may not recognize this name, Dina is a studio that is working as a portal, and specifically for the mobile market, creating mobile games. This studio even partnered up with Nintendo, which is crazy. I know I read this a while back, but I didn't really, when I started researching and that name popped up again, I was like, why do I remember this? And then I started looking into the studio, and yeah, and of course, there's a lot of games I already played, especially those that are Nintendo titles. So they're behind titles such as the Pokémon Masters title, which we recently talked about, which was released in 2019. But you also have the Mario Kart Tour, Super Mario Run, and Fire Emblem Heroes, just to name a few that they work together with Nintendo. And there is a partnership going on there, and this is basically Nintendo got like 10% of Dina as in stocks when they partner up, while Dina got like 1% of Nintendo. So it's a is an evaluated kind of switch going on there with this partnership, and they, I would say, they kind of became like a first-hand mobile developer for Nintendo. So on that information and that note, I kind of feel it's sad that Nintendo, they of course still working on the mobile titles they already have out, but as I remember, news have said that they're not gonna focus on the mobile market, they're instead gonna focus on their own consoles and their own platforms, so to speak. But it's interesting to see such a studio and that one of our composer episodes ended up in this section as well. I just love and adore, and it's so much fun when these kind of things do happen. And yeah, this is kind of where we stop with this week's episode, and I really want to give a large thank you for for Yuka Watanabe for bringing such amazing music, and of course this amazing track record of video games that you worked on. I know I usually don't tend to give this praise to the composer that we specifically talk about. I tend to think that the episode kind of think that way for them, as I'm covering them specifically. But at the same time, I kind of want to put them more in the spotlight. So I think I will start doing this. I will try my best to start doing this, at least, to actually give... When we're doing composer-specific episodes, I'm going to try my best to give a little bit more of a praise at the end of the episode before we close everything up. So thank you so much, Yuka Watanabe, for the amazing work that you've done. And looking forward for more games that you work on in the future, of course. Anyway, for everybody who loved and enjoyed this episode, you can find other episodes of Gameable Audio on our homepage, videospelsklubben.se, Spotify, or in your closest podcast app. If there's an app outside there that we do not exist on, feel free to write a comment to me, and I will try and get it up and going on that podcast app as well. Feel free to follow and comment on one of our social medias, either on Facebook or on Instagram. Just search for Gameable Audio and you will find that section. From time to time, I usually tend, because I have created a new Discord server where everybody can talk and get to know me a little bit more, if you do wish so. You can follow my other work with game development, what type of board games I'm currently playing, what type of games I'm currently playing, and also talk to me about these episodes, other VGM music that we need to cover, announcements for newly released content within video game music, etc. I'm trying to cover as much as possible, so I have everything stocked up in my own little Discord. So following any of our social medias, I usually tend to post from time to time the latest, as I only can have like a 30-day open link for the Discord, as it's not an open public community yet. But we will get there as soon as I get more members into that Discord. But if not, just ask me and I will definitely give you that link in case you missed one of those posts with an older code, for example. Anyway, if you think that is not enough for some reason, I don't know, you tell all your friends and families, like, hey, listen to Chris, listen to this, he does a great job. You can also support this podcast if you do wish to do that. All the support that I get for the podcast will go into future content and quality upgrades. But also in the end, when I don't need any financials for this, it will go out to future composers. And by future composers, I'm specifically talking about new composers that just is trying to get into the scene. They may not have the financials. We will work as a fund with Gameable Audio and give them the money to get started and get that really good get-go from the beginning. Yeah, if that sounds like a great plan and something you want to support, become a Patreon. Currently, the awesome Patreon backers that we have today is Daniel Unemark, Lars Schenström, Titti Schenström, Kevin Wikström, and Mike Björkholm. And just as a side note as well, just so I had that said, of course, everybody who is a Patreon will also have, if there are any giveaways, etc., they will go first and foremost to our amazing backers. And for every tier there, you will also get a nice little Gameable Audio sticker that you can place on whatever you like. There's a local bus, place it on it. There's a laptop that you love and adore that you work on, place that on that. You know, you can put them on cats, dogs. Maybe not cat dogs, maybe not other persons, people. Maybe yourself if you would like to, but yeah. You know, rules of stickers. Doesn't really matter, I guess. Anyway, I'm just talking nonsense now. Links to where you can either buy or support the composer that we talked about today will be found in our main post at videospelsklubben.se. And yep, if somebody else has followed what's going on Netflix, there's a lot of different releases and so on. The next episode theme is going to be a special one, as we're going out of November. We're not going to focus more on female composers. And I was just so hyped when I was watching this new Scott Pilgrim Takes Off that released on Netflix. I'm not going to talk about the series. Instead, we're going to go specifically and look into the soundtrack made by Anna Managuchi for Scott Pilgrim vs. the World, the game. So, Next episode, we're going to do a deep dive for that specific game. I will definitely play through that game as well for that episode, because I have played that demo a ton of times. Love and adore the music. I've been listening to it so freaking much. So it's going to be nice to talk a little bit more specifically about the soundtrack. Of course, I'm pretty sure there's a lot of different interviews and so on I can dig into to see more good pieces from the Scott Pilgrim soundtrack. Yep, that is kind of it. And before we're saying goodbye, the podcast theme music was composed by the amazing Thormir Dahl. And with that said, thank you all for listening in on the Gameable Audio Podcast. I am your host, Christopher Winstrom. Have a nice weekend. See you all, guys, next time.